This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We sit around and talk about our Constitution, but it's been troubled and destroyed multiple times over. And we just happen to have a strain of it in our population that we like to deny that it's there. But the truth is that we have struggled with it and fought against it. And it's just, it's constantly been here. It's been a constant throughout our history.
As most of us have been cooped up doing our best to keep the pandemic at bay, the current resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has decided that his job is to make daily TV appearances wherein he flouts science, deludes the public, brags about made-up accomplishments, and bullies members of the White House press pool who deign to ask him straightforward questions. It's just another day in this truth is stranger than fiction reality we're all doing our darndest to get through. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with political analyst and author Jared Yates Sexton about a Republican Party that is chosen to be led by a malignant narcissist, a situation that has only gotten worse in the midst of an unprecedented global health crisis. We learn what Yates refers to as the Republican death cult, discuss the effect this party has had on the climate movement, and get a glimpse of the struggle over universal access to the ballot box. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jared Yates Sexton. He's an author and political analyst, and his upcoming book is called American Rule. Jared, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex.
So that wasn't the full title of American Rule. Why don't you tell us the full title and the thesis of the book you're working on?
For sure. It's called American Rule, How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People. And it's a retelling of American history without American exceptionalism. And the thesis of the book is that the myth of American exceptionalism, the idea that America is chosen to be God's country, that it's chosen to be the hero of history, is a myth that has been perpetuated and weaponized and has allowed America to conquer the world and change the flow of human events. But it's a myth, and it's false, and it's done unbelievable damage, not just to the people of America, but people around the world, and also our concept of reality. So it's all about retelling American history, tracing how that myth came about, how it's been perpetuated and weaponized, and what the truth underneath it is. Hopefully, in hopes that we can find something truer and more humane and better once we discard that myth.
And in that vein, you tweeted recently that, let me just quote it, just a reminder that Donald Trump is the leader of a neo-Confederate evangelical hyper-capitalist death cult born from the manipulations of Jerry Falwell and Ronald Reagan. And then you speak towards the current global pandemic and you say they'll happily sacrifice millions of lives and will joyfully pretend it never, ever happened. And then you go on to say what we're watching now in America is the usage of fragile white supremacy to destroy our country. So let's first dive into the concept of neo-Confederacy and maybe define it and how this concept of a neo-Confederacy informs the modern GOP.
For sure. So I grew up in what I've taken to calling the cult of the Shining City, and I give it that moniker because I'm trying to encapsulate a certain type of evangelicalism. Because obviously there are people who are Christians or of other faiths who don't believe in this garbage, and I grew up in that. And it's this nationalistic idea, and it's this idea that is completely tied to white supremacy. The idea that white people are sort of a chosen race, and again going back to American exceptionalism and the idea that America is supposed to be the hero of history and God's chosen nation. You know, a lot of people grow up in this and we're basically taught not to question America, not to question capitalism, not to question leadership or in the cult, you're not even allowed to watch certain movies or listen to certain music or else, you know, Satan can get his hooks into you. The neo-Confederate aspect was something that I didn't know about until like the last couple of years. It actually took researching the new book for me to understand why I grew up the way that I did and why millions of Americans grow up the way they do. And the truth of it is that America and this idea of America being an exceptional country, that hasn't always been just a singular monolithic idea. In fact, when we had the Civil War, what actually happened was that the South and the North both took their claims towards exceptionalism and it divided them as people. And that's one of the reasons why we ended up with two separate countries within one country. And the Confederates actually believed that they were the truer America, and they were very, very Christian and religious. And so their churches taught that God was a racist, white supremacist God who had divided whites and blacks, and that that line should never, ever be crossed. Now, of course, the Confederacy lost, and every time there would be a lost battle or the cause would suddenly be endangered, their preachers would always preach that, that the people had been sinful and God was angry with them and that this racist God was, you know, testing their faith. Well, after the Civil War, this sort of lingers around with Southern preachers for a while. And then during the Civil Rights Movement, as people like Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders start embracing the more social justice aspects of Christianity, they start talking about equality and equal treatment and empathy. You have people like Jerry Falwell and other neo-Confederate preachers who believe in this racist version of God, who start changing the faith of Christianity towards power and money and white supremacy. And all of a sudden, you see this divide in America that starts happening with religious myth and nationalistic myth.
Yes, if you saw The Family, that yep. multi-part documentary, and it was based on the book by Jeff Charlotte, that kind of gives you a glimpse into some of these sects of what you're speaking towards.
Yeah, and I really admire Jeff's work. We've talked about this stuff, and it's you know, I think that book is a really good snapshot and encapsulation of how these things have sort of interwoven themselves with power. And that's one of the missing stories about how America has worked and how we've gotten to the place that we are, is that we often overlook the way that all of these coalitions are created. Right? The evangelical right embraced Reagan not because he was evangelical, but because he was willing to operate as a spokesperson for the evangelical faith. And so you start seeing all these movements of power that have their own interlocking considerations. They start coming together and they start forming these relationships. And every time that they do, like, the picture gets muddied, reality gets muddied, and the story that is sold to people just becomes stranger and stranger and farther removed from any reality that you could consider objective.
Jared, you had another post that I thought would be a good jumping off point for a larger discussion. It's about the role of hypercapitalism during a pandemic. Maybe you can relate what you call a death cult, this obsession with the bottom line, to the climate movement and how a lot of these issues that you're hitting upon work under the umbrella of climate and the environment.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's one of the great untalked about topics that we're not even discussing right now. We're talking about a pandemic as if a pandemic just erupts out of nowhere and it doesn't have anything to do with humans moving into territories where they formerly weren't, or climate change, or any types of disruptions that we've been responsible for. But I'll start with this. And I got a lot of questions from people asking me, how is it that a body like Fox News that, is completely focused towards, appealing to older viewers. How is it at the beginning of this pandemic, they were telling their older viewers, the people who would be most susceptible to coronavirus, that they shouldn't worry about it and they should go outside and live about their lives?
It's the best time to fly.
Right. It's the best time to fly. This is all a big hoax. And here's the thing. They knew that it wasn't a hoax. They knew that it was dangerous. Why would they tell their own viewers to take risks? And the whole point of it is, with hypercapitalism, is even if you know there's a risk, and even if you know that it could endanger the people that you depend on, your customers, it's the same thing as tobacco companies, selling cancerous products that they know are dangerous to the people that they're giving them to. And this goes back to this idea of hypercapitalism and how you endanger people for short-term profit and you completely mortgage any long-term idea or discussion. So I don't need to tell you, but even oil and petroleum companies understand that climate change is real. Their scientists tell them this. They have these reports. They have seen all of it. They're not stupid. They understand that climate change is real and that it will have long-term catastrophic consequences. But the way they look at it is they're like, yeah, eventually we'll probably have to change things. But if we can slow it down, we can make profits until we get to that point. And the whole idea of the corporate hyper-capitalistic mindset is, I can make as much profit. It's like driving a car at a cliff. I'm going to drive as close to the cliff as I possibly can. And at the last possible second, I will hit the brakes and I'm not going to go over the cliff. But I'll be able to go as fast as I want until that point. They know that climate change is real. They know that climate change is going to take lives. They know that climate change could possibly take down the entirety of the human species, but they're going to get their money regardless, because that is the hyper-capitalistic strategic mindset, because it tells them you have to look for advantages and you have to look to get yours, even if it is mortgaging off long-term consequences.
Suitcase out there too. Throw my troubles out the door. I don't need them anymore. 'Cause tonight I'll be staying here with you. I should have left this town.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to author and political analyst Jared Yates Sexton. He's also the co-host of the Muckrake podcast, and people can read his and he also blogs at themuckrake.com. So, Jared, we spoke to Chris DeDecker a couple of years ago. He's the founder of Low Tech magazine, and we've had several other guests who talk about this obsession with growth. DeDecker actually was talking about maybe even abandoning efficiency as one of the barometers for planetary stewardship. But when you look at some of the traditional economic barometers for what a successful society is, GDP, a Dow Jones that just keeps going up, up, and up, you have to also think about, what are some of the better ways to do it? We've talked to people who advocate for a global happiness index as a better way for us to gauge our success. What are some of the solutions to this seemingly intractable problem?
Oh, man. I mean, what you're talking about is a sustainable society where human progress and human happiness is at the forefront, which is what I think it should be. I mean, you know, I've been doing research on this, and there have been movements on this for decades and decades and decades. And every time that it ever is talked about, people will roll their eyes, and then inevitably there is some sort of giant disaster that proves it's what we should be doing, and then we learn nothing from it. I was really disheartened today. So we're taping on April 8th, and President Trump tweeted something today where he said, you know, we need to get done with this pandemic and then just forget it ever happened. And to do so would be to, like, completely forget that hypercapitalism has basically reared its head and said, we don't care if millions die, we need to get this economy going. And meanwhile, that economy that they're trying to save is inherently unstable. If you look throughout American history, the way that our economy works is it just constantly revs up its engine and goes and goes and goes until it crashes. And then it revs up its engine and goes and goes and goes. It's a ticking bomb, no matter how you look at it and no matter what time period you look at it. We have to look at this and realize it is an existential danger, and it always has been, because it's not actually helping anyone. It's not like anyone is sharing in this. There is a top 1% or 2% that is benefiting from this, and there's a power structure that benefits from it. But everybody outside of it, I mean, I don't have to tell listeners right now, the neoliberal order that we're living in is really miserable for people. And even now, while we're in the middle of a pandemic and we're sheltering in place, I mean, all you have to do is go online and look at people who are torturing themselves and having terrible self-esteem for not being productive enough while we're sheltering in place and hiding from a generational pandemic. This thing doesn't work. And you know, exponential growth is a complete and utter fraud. It's been proven as a fraud time and time again. It's time that we do something better, and it's time that we do something more human. But it's a really it's really demoralizing to see that people are just determined to keep making the same mistakes and hurting themselves and everyone else in the process.
Well, we could be demoralized by a tweet by the president, but I think because so many people decide, well, if he says it must be the opposite, I think maybe we can look at that as a positive, that we're not going to forget this. And there is an important movement of voices like yourself that are reminding us to question authority. You also wrote an interesting piece a few weeks ago called The Myth of Strength, Authoritarians, Power, and Crisis as Opportunity. So walk us through some of these myths. We always assume that authoritarians, for example, make the trains run on time.
Well, and that's something that I grew up being told. And one of the reasons that we have all these myths about authoritarianism is because American hegemony has completely depended on strongmen. We're talking about fascists who are capitalistic and sympathetic towards American needs. And so as a result, they keep down their populations. And this always happens in the second and third world, particularly with people of color, because American history shows that Americans do not actually believe that people of color deserve self-determining governments. And whenever, especially in the 1950s, 1960s, and so on, whenever they would find self-determination, we would always overthrow those leaders and put in strongmen. So these myths are as a result of the American need to understand what we've done and somehow or another forgive ourselves for doing these. And so America has sort of turned a blind eye to, quite frankly, another authoritarian that we have right now in office, and the fact that American society welcomes authoritarianism. So the first myth is the idea that authoritarians are cruel, but they're competent. This is the idea, like you said, that they make the trains run on time. But the truth is, they don't at all. They're actually incredibly incompetent, and they're very contradictory. Because they're insecure, what they do is they completely surround themselves with sycophants, and they make them battle like scorpions in a jar over their affection. And so as a result, you don't actually have anything approaching competence, but you have an entire system that is designed to tell the people that this is competence by propaganda and public relations and all those manipulations. The second myth is the idea that authoritarians have a firm set of principles or beliefs. It's the idea that they are so possessed of what they believe and what they feel that they won't let anything stop them. But that's completely untrue. Because authoritarians are insecure, they don't even themselves. So they're constantly picking from different types of ideologies and changing based on what time of day it is, because they have so much self-loathing that they're constantly contradicting themselves, which, I mean, you see with Trump constantly. The third myth is that authoritarianism is like a spell that just happens suddenly. This is the idea that Hitler was a charismatic orator and, you know, he would lull people into magic sleep or whatever. And the truth is that authoritarianism only takes hold as media bodies hold possession of people, that they push propaganda and manipulation and altered reality. And this is something that we definitely see with right-wing media now. It is its own alternate reality bubble, and that's the exact same type of thing we see in authoritarian despots constantly. And the fourth is that fascism is a European phenomenon relegated to a specific moment in time. And we tell ourselves this to believe, first of all, that we eradicated it from the face of the earth because we are God's chosen country and the hero of time and history. But the truth is, fascism is just part of human nature. It's just another side of the coin. You know, you have benevolence and malevolence.
We go to that darkest place in human history and we associate it with these buzzwords, but it's not necessarily that far from reality.
No, and it's not. And one of the reasons that we like to pretend that we eradicated it and because we defeated the Nazis in a war is because we actually were really closely connected to the Third Reich and the Nazi regime. The idea, and I talked a little bit in the beginning of this interview about American exceptionalism. The idea of American exceptionalism actually has its start in the same place that German exceptionalism does, which is the Romantic movement of the 18th century and 19th century. And a lot of that comes together to form, these big genocidal regimes. We had, you know, the genocide of the Native American population. They happened to have the Jews of Europe. And so what you actually see is a really close relationship, and the fact that America has had so many close calls with fascism, and we sit around and talk about our Constitution, but it's been troubled and destroyed multiple times over. And we just happen to have a strain of it in our population that we like to deny that it's there. But the truth is that we have struggled with it and fought against it, and it's just, it's constantly been here. It's been a constant throughout our history.
master of night just sings songs out of tune while a mantle of bright light shone down from the room. Come down in time, I still hear her sing so clear in my ear like it was today. Come down in time was the message she gave to me. Come down in time, I'll meet you halfway.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Jared Yates Sexton. He's an author and political analyst, and his upcoming book is American Rule. So we were talking about American exceptionalism, and it's rooted in the very fundamental idea of voting. And right now we're seeing some really pretty explicit challenges to our way of government, not only in governing, but deciding who gets to govern. You refer to it as dying to vote, especially when you look at this recent decision by the Supreme Court that Wisconsinites have to go out in violation of their lockdown in order to exercise their franchise. How do we fight back against this insanity? And maybe first outline kind of for our listeners how the two sides have kind of drawn up the idea of voting.
It's awful. It's awful. I mean, really, what the Republican Party has done, particularly since the 1970s and especially into the 1980s and 1990s and now these past two decades, is the Republican Party has realized that its base is not substantial enough to win on its own in Democratic elections. And so what has happened is you have seen disenfranchising, strategies, you've seen gerrymandering, you've seen everything from, closing down of polling places. And the Republican Party has decided at all cost, it doesn't matter what it appears to everyone, they're going to do this. I mean, their own files say that the gerrymandering effort has all been based on race, and it's all based on disenfranchising. It is a modern type of Jim Crow. And so what we keep seeing is they're able to do it because we live in such a fast-paced society that we get so much news that we're overwhelmed by it, and it's almost impossible. It's like sand sipping, seeping through your fingers. Like, it's almost hard to figure out what you're supposed to be upset about and when you're supposed to be upset about it. But what we have to do, and this is another thesis of the book American Rule, what we have to do is we have to start forming community-based organizations. And American history shows us that this type of fascism and this type of authoritarianism, it grows and grows and grows. And it also, there's all kinds of aspects to it. And it has everything to do from inequality of wealth to dispersion of power to, ecological disasters and the way we treat people and the environment. And eventually, there comes a point where the pendulum moves so far to one side in terms of power and abuse of power that Americans form community organizations and grassroots efforts. And so what has to happen is we have to not just have people who you would consider activists or people who are really, really tuned into this stuff and do volunteer and work for organizations, but we have to start reaching out to other people who may not even be aware that this thing is happening. Because again, in a neoliberal order in modern times, it's almost too exhausting to do your work, much less keep up with all of this stuff and much less be involved. But we have to figure out a way from a grassroots perspective to form those community organizations and start fighting against these things. Because right now, all of political power is so top heavy. And by top heavy, I mean, it's even above government. We're talking about corporations. We're talking about the obscenely wealthy. We're talking about, corporations that aren't even technically American. They're nation states unto themselves now. It has to be a movement on the pendulum, and it has to come from grassroots organization.
I could view this through a cynical lens, but I'm choosing to look at it in an optimistic light in the face of so much terrible news. I think that this pandemic may expedite what we need to do is switch over to mail-in voting. And I think Trump, he said the parts out loud that he's not supposed to. He tweeted today, for example, that Republicans should fight very hard when it comes to statewide mail-in voting. Democrats are clamoring for it. Tremendous potential for voter fraud. And for whatever reason, doesn't work out well for Republicans. The whatever reason is when more people vote, Democrats win. That's the reason. We all know that. And I saw a reporter recently at one of these press conferences ask Trump, like, don't you mail in vote? What's so wrong about that? He's like, yeah, but I can. You know, this is my right.
Yeah, I'm the president.
I've worked as a volunteer in election protection since 2004 in various elections and seen these long lines. And I think that we're ripe for mail-in voting as a country. And what better excuse, but everyone has to stay home for a global health crisis. Maybe that'll finally move this ball in mail-in voting. It'll come down to the courts, unfortunately. And that's pretty scary. But each state has the right to decide how they're going to conduct these elections come November, don't they?
They do. And man, this is such a weird thing to even have to tie all this to. But the real question here, as always with the court as it is how will John Roberts rule? Right? I mean, you have one Supreme Court justice who holds basically the entire balance of what the Supreme Court does at this point. And he has shown that at times he can be a thoughtful arbiter of the law. So the question is whether or not that can happen. But the thing that is really frightening, and this is the thing that I keep sounding the alarm about, is, you know, most people right now are saying, you know, yeah, it looks like this election is going to end up being a hard-fought battle, how this thing happens. And yeah, it might be endangered a little bit, but you know, we have a constitution, we have these laws, we have these customs. But the problem is, because that myth and because this political manipulation and political hardball has led to where we are, those things, those constitutions, those laws, those customs are only as good as people's ability to fight for them. And we have watched time and time and time again for decades now as this party has went against the will of the people and has just cravenly manipulated and, you know, broken the law and completely thumbed their nose at the Constitution. So I am worried about what this is going to look like, because reforming, an election this quickly would be almost impossible anyway. And now in the middle of this, when people know they can get away with things, that worries me as well. But I'm like you, I'm holding out hope. I really want to believe that this pandemic and the consequences of it might lead to people reconsidering who they are, what society is supposed to be about, what communities are, what we should value, and how to really tune in to living and politics. I really hope that's true. And that's one of the things that's keeping me, from staying up all night and pacing the halls of my house.
Well, election integrity and mail-in ballots, et cetera, are going to be talked about on this show, and I'm sure on the Muckrake podcast for the next 6 months for sure. I highly recommend you checking out Jared's work at themuckrake.com. Jared Yates Sexton, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by King Sunny Ade, Aaron Bodie, and Sting. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.